We've been asked to say that today's learning is Le'ilui Nishmas Birshat Bahtar Bas Shmuel. So we're holding on page Samach Aleph in Bava Basra, Ois Lamed Dalid. We started learning previously that there's a machlokas, there's different tanoim and different amiroim are discussing about when ghouls are born. What that means. Reviya Bala Olam, does it mean there's more increase in the world? Or Meriva Bala Olam, does it mean there's more argument in the world? We talked about whether Eov had more daughters than before, or whether he had the same number of daughters, but they were particularly beautiful. And we talked about the story where Rav Shimon ben Revi had a daughter and was disappointed, and his father tells him, Reviya Bala Olam, you have greater increase in the world, and Bakapara tells him this is not really all it should be. There would have been a certain advantage in you having a boy first. I didn't have a chance to mention because we were in a bit of a rush last time, but Marsha makes the point over here that when Bakapara says to him, Tanchumen shel Hevel, it doesn't just mean, we translated it as it means like a useless or a vain comfort, but Marsha points out it also means as in Hevel, as in the character from Chumash Bereishis, the son of Adam and Chava. That it means, in other words, the kind of comfort that Adam had after Hevel was killed, and right now at the moment he only has a daughter because it's brought in Midrashim that Cain was not really fathered by Adam, he was fathered by Shadim or something like that. So therefore, Hevel was Adam's only real son, and when he's killed, then Adam doesn't really have comfort of having a son until later on when Shais is born. All right, so the Gemara says Ketanoi. This is actually like a machlokas tanoim about whether having a girl or not having a girl is the bigger bracha. The pasuk says about Avraham v'Hashem beirachas Avraham bakol, that Hashem blessed Avraham with everything. So my bakol, what's that word bakol? In other words, it could have just said v'Hashem beirachas Avraham. So Rav Meir omer shelo hoyseloi bas. Rav Meir says the bracha was that he didn't have a daughter. Now, what does that mean? I mean, does that mean that it would be a bracha? So according to that, at least on the surface, in other words, we're saying, according to Rav Meir, it's more of a bracha not to have a daughter. Now, a lot of different mafoshim talk about why should that be? I mean, look, you know, as we said before, the world needs both boys and girls. Marsha makes the point that after all, you know, Adam at first was created alone, and then Chava was created out of a piece of him. So therefore, by that looking at it that way, then the Zohar is everything, and the woman is only a part of that, and therefore, so you can say that he had the bracha bakol just by having a boy without having a girl. The Ramban talks about an idea that, after all, it's not necessarily a general thing that it's good not to have girls, maybe only in Avraham's particular case, because if he had a girl, who would he marry her off to? As it is, with Yitzchak, he had to find a wife for her, but at least whoever he finds is going to come from where she lives and live with Avraham and his family, as in fact they found Rivka, and they did just that, and she did just that. If Avraham had a daughter, says the mayor, who would he marry her off to? He would have to marry her off to one of the local goyim on the face of it. And that's not a very good thing. So therefore, for him, it would have been a bracha, says the Ramban, to not have a daughter. But that wouldn't necessarily mean that in general it's that way. So a couple of mafoshim bring up the point also, you know, we know that a person has to have a boy and a girl in order to be Mekayim Pruavu. But you could say, so listen, Eitz Yosef says, listen, Balabatis, you could say, according to the mayor, fine, Hashem didn't grant him a daughter. Nevertheless, he tried. He was Osik Bepiri Veribya. And then look, Onis Rahmana Patre. Other mafoshim make the point that even though the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, Machlokas, Bishamai Bishilo, whether a person is Mekayim Pruavu by having two boys according to Bishamai, or a boy and a girl according to Bishilo, some Rishonim learn that even Bishilo is saying you could have two boys in your Yotze Pruavu, but also a boy and a girl in your Yotze Pruavu that way as well. Well, according to that way of looking at it, then Abraham is Yotze Pruavu because he did have two boys after all, he had Yitzchak and Ishmael. So according to that, then there wouldn't have been an issue with it. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shahoyselai bas. Rabbi Yehuda says, on the contrary, he had a daughter. That was the bracha. The fact that he has a daughter. And again, you know, like we learned last time, and Marsha points out, you know, the limiting factor in the increase of the population is the number of women. So if Avraham has a daughter, it means there's a greater possibility for an increase in the population than if he only has a son. Reb Shamshon Nachal Hirsch makes a point on it. First, he says, as far as Reb Yehuda's opinion, that as far as Reb Meir's opinion that he didn't have a daughter, he says similar to Ramban, because again, if he had a daughter, who would he marry her to? It would be a sad thing if Avraham ends up having grandchildren who are off the derech of Yiddishkeit, because she goes and lives with wherever her husband is, and she and they go and live like the rest of the goyim in the world. On the other hand, he says Reb Yehuda's opinion that he had a daughter is sakir. The bracha was that Avraham did have a daughter, and she did end up marrying somebody from outside the family, and she was so powerful that she had a good influence on her husband, and also made him and their family be also followers of Avraham. So according to that, in other words, Reb Meir's opinion would be it wouldn't have been possible, therefore better he shouldn't have a daughter, and Reb Yehuda's opinion is fakir. Not only it was possible, but she actually accomplished it. The Gemara says, Achirim say, Bas Hoysaloy Avraham, not only did Avraham have a daughter, Ubakol Shema, her name was Bakol. Now, an interesting point is that usually Achirim means Reb Meir, and here we have Reb Meir himself just saying that he didn't have a daughter. So one, there's a few possibilities. Tosfos elsewhere talks about in some places, maybe in fact Achirim is not always Reb Meir, even though we usually say Achirim is Reb Meir, maybe not always. And in one place, Tosfos discusses the possibility that maybe he's called Achirim specifically when he's quoting something from his Rebbe, Elisha ben Avuya, Elisha Acher. So then he's called Achirim. So then in that case, the first opinion over here of Reb Meir would be either his own opinion or an opinion that he learned from one of his other Rebbeim. And then the opinion over here under Achirim would be the opinion that he learned from Acher. Anyway, if we say that it means that what would be the point of that? What would be the point of that? That he had a daughter named Bakol. So the Ramban continues in it and says that the word kol represents one of Hashem's midas, one of the Yud Gimel midas harachmim, specifically the mazel Ashmini noitzer, from which noitzer chesed, from which comes Hashem's great kindness to us. And to say that he had a daughter named Bakol indicates the midas that come midas of Hashem that come out of that, and therefore the idea is Afi Kabbalah. In other words, the idea would be that Abraham had the fullness of being able to accomplish Hashem's purposes in the world and to be a Merkava for the Shekhinah. And Ramban talks about it in Kabbalah Dika Osius. It's a little hard to understand, but that seems to be the gist of it. Nachsam Sofer says an interesting idea that maybe both things are true. When we say that Avraham didn't have a daughter, would mean with Sarah. On the other hand, when we're saying he had a daughter, would mean with Hagar. And he makes a calculation, given that Yishmael was 14 years older than Yitzchak. He makes a calculation that if they had a daughter together, she would have been 12 years older than Yitzchak. Therefore, when Yitzchak got married at age 40, she would have been 52. Bakol, Gematria 52. So therefore, so that's one way of looking at it, that it means that Bakol Shema, that her name was Bakol, and she was in fact the age Bakol when Yitzchak was ready to get married. Rashi says a similar thing, actually a vaguely similar thing on the pasuk. He says Bakol, actually Balaturim, I think, says that Bakol is Gematria Ben. Bakol itself is the Gematria, the word son, and it means now that Avraham has a son, Vashem Berach Avraham Bakol, with a son, now he has to figure out what to do as far as getting him married off. Rav Hirsch goes on to say, following his shitta, that the idea is, again, so we have Rav Meir saying he didn't have a daughter because who would he marry off to? Rav Yehuda says he had a daughter and she was able to be mashpia on her husband. Either way, according to either of those opinions, it would presuppose that Avraham has to be mashpia on people through his children. So either he shouldn't have a daughter so that she doesn't go off the derech, or he is mashpia on them through his daughter. Acherim are saying you didn't even need that. Just the fact, just the force of Avraham's personality and the fact that he was so clearly blessed by Kol with everything, that itself made him have a tremendous influence on people. Therefore, bas hoisa lal Avraham, bas kol shema, he didn't need a gashmiistika daughter in order to have this effect on people around him. He was able to just through the force of how popular he is, basically. He goes on to it. By the way, he goes on to talk about, we're going to talk about later on in the Gemara, about the brachas Bakol Mikol Kol, that Avraham, it says Bakol, Yitzchak, it says Mikol, Yaakov, it says Kol. And it represents, he talks about in this connection, that these represent, you look at Avraham's lifetime, is basically one success after another. Even the Goyim recognize him, Nesia Lekimata Besechenu, and so on and so forth. So he has Bakol in everything that's going on. He has the Kol, he has Me'enu Lamabo, as the Gemara is going to say later. Yitzchak was already in his times. Things are starting to get not so good. The Plishtim persecuted him and whatever. So he has Mikol. Within everything, he still has the Kol. He still has Me'en Olam Haba, no matter what circumstance he is. And Yaakov, who had a life full of suffering, nevertheless, Kol, everything in it, he realizes, is Latova. So that's the reason for the three different expressions, he says. Yeshli Kol, he says, exactly. Whereas Esav says, Yeshli Grov, I have more than I need. Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol, I have exactly what I need in order to serve the Eivishter. And in everything that happens to me, I always realize that it's Kol. That's all part of that's all what Hashem wants. Yeah. So the Ein Yaakov interjects over here, L'chamon Perek Mishneh, Sevi Yomai Mazeh. Later on, in the ninth Perek of Amasech, the Gemara also brings this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that Avraham had a daughter. What the Gemara says is like this. The Gemara is discussing the point over there. You have a case where in the eighth and ninth prakim of Armasachta, we'll get to them in a few weeks, says the Shem, are talking about dinim of Yerusha. Now you have various cases where a person before he passes away decides that he wants to give out bequests to his children. So there's the regular dinim of Yerusha, and then he can decide that there are going to be certain things that he's going to give specially out to his children in advance of that. So one case, it talks about a case over there where a man might want to give more to his daughters than to his sons. And Rabbi Yehuda talks about such a case over there, that it's better, that it would be better for him to give more to his daughters than his sons. So the Gemara brings this Gemara in connection with that. The Omru, when the Gemara says over there, Eimur d'shamach le'ed Rabbi Yehuda da'afil brata nami le'chasri rachman ala Avram. Fine, we see Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the bracha to Avram is Hashem did not have him lacking anything, including that he had a daughter. You see from this that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a daughter is better than a son, and therefore that a father should want to give more to his daughter than his son. And the Gemara continues and discusses the point over there that there is a different basis on which Rabbi Yehuda says that. When we get to that piece of Gemara is also excerpted in Ein Yaakov, and we'll get to it in a few weeks, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk about the Gemara. Will explain over there why Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's better for a man to provide more for his daughters than for his sons. Getting back to our Gemara over here, Rabbi Lozer Hamudoy, Rabbi Lozer Hamudoy has a different explanation of what it means Vashem Berachas Avraham Bakol. Or maybe not a different explanation, but a complementary explanation. Another great thing about Avraham Avinu. It's tagninus gdoila hoysalol Avraham or belibo shal Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu had tremendous itztagninus. Itztagninus usually means astrology, the ability to know the exact motions of the stars and planets and whatnot, and be able to tell from that about a person's characteristics and so forth. So Avraham had a tremendous knowledge of itztagninus. Shekol mal choyze bakechavim. Now she says the ability to look in the stars and be able to tell from them what's going on. All the kings of east and west would get up early and come to Avraham's door to learn that from him. So Marshall points out like this. Regular itztagninim, regular stargazers, are not always able to tell 100% the truth. There's always some inherent inaccuracy in what they say. Kind of like weather forecasters, you know. On the other hand, Avraham's itztagninus was much greater than theirs. He was, Hashem had taken him at one point beyond the stars even. So they say, itztagninus shalcha, go out of your itztagninus, and I'm taking you beyond the stars, you're higher than the whole Teva. So therefore, he has a much greater and more certain knowledge of it. So therefore, all these kings from east and west would be coming to him in order to learn this from him. Why east and west? Marsha points out as a practical matter because people lived more or less east and west of Eretz Yisrael. Not very many people lived too far north or south because it would be too hot or too cold. Nowadays, you have people live all over the world, but back then it was a lot harder without modern conveniences. It was a lot harder to live closer to the equator or closer to the poles, and therefore the Gemara sometimes talks about Mizrach HaMayrev as representing the totality of where people are, or at least where civilization is. Anyway, so the vort is, in other words, that Avraham knew his knowledge of astrology, of astronomy and astrology, was better than that of the regular ones, only because he was beyond Teva, and therefore he had a more certain knowledge of it, rather than theirs, which is just based on practical experience and observation, and it's not always accurate. The Maharal makes a somewhat similar point. He says Avraham's knowledge came through Nevuah. It didn't come through gazing at the stars at all. Therefore, everybody knows that he's a reliable Navi, and therefore everybody's coming to his door all the time. The Rashba over here, you see the Rashba's commentary printed over here on the page in Ein Yaakov. So he says what it means is that that Avraham, when we say it's tagninus over here, we don't necessarily mean stargazing and astrology and things like that. It means all the great midas and all the great knowledge and chokhmas that Avraham Avinu had, that because he was acting so much according to what Hashem wants, everybody saw that and everybody was impressed by that, and therefore everybody would be coming to his door from east and west, from Mizrach and Ma'ariv, meaning that they would be coming from the morning to the evening in order to learn from him. Reb Shimon ben Yochayim, Magolus, Evan Toiva, Hoysal Avram, Tluya Betzavare Shal Avram Avinu. Avraham had a precious stone hanging around his neck. Any sick person who would see that precious stone, miyad nisrape, would right away be healed. Over Shosh and Nifter, Avraham Avinu in Olam, when Avraham Avinu passed away, not like Kodesh Baruch Hu, but Tola Begal Gochama. Then Hashem took that precious stone and hung it on the sun. So from now on, you want to see that precious stone, then you'll find it in the sun. Vahainu, or Omer Abaya, Hainu, this is what, Da'amri Inchi, this bears out the popular expression that people say, Idli Yoima, when the day gets higher, when the sun, in other words, is higher in the sky, Idli Ktsira, then the sickness is also made lighter. In other words, a sick person usually feels better during the daytime, because that's why, in other words, because they have this precious stone of Avraham's is now attached to the sun, and therefore, when the sun is in the sky, then the effect of that precious stone is more noticeable in the world. And therefore, sick people feel better. Tosfos points out that the Gemara tells us, we learned not so long ago in Bava Metzia, that until Yaakov, people were never sick. People were this famous thing from Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, that people would live their whole lives healthy and then sneeze and then pass away, which is why we say tzul gezun when somebody sneezes. And the Gemara says over there that until Elisha's times, there was never a person who was sick and recovered from a sickness. So what do you mean over here? That sick people would look at Avraham's stone. So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One is that here we're talking about not a person was sick as in from germs or whatever, but let's say, for example, a person was sick because they had been injured. So that kind of thing. A person was injured, then he could look at Avraham's stone and be healed by it. Whereas the thing with Yaakov and with Elisha is talking about the kind of sickness where a person, for example, when a person gets old and their body is wearing out. That kind of sickness didn't exist until Yaakov, and the kind that a person should recover from it didn't happen until Elisha. Then Tosfos brings another explanation from Ibn Tam and the Ri that what it means is until Yaakov there were never any fatal illnesses, and until Elisha there was never that a person could recover from a fatal illness. But here we're talking about less than that. Here we're talking about, in other words, just illnesses that are not fatal, just uncomfortable, and those would be healed by Avraham's precious stone. So Marsha explains like this. So the vote would be, in other words, Marsha makes a different distinction. Sometimes there are certain kinds, or there are natural cures, and then there are supernatural cures, or cures based on sgulis. So Avraham Avinu knew not only all the natural remedies, Avraham also knew all the sgula-based ones. So the Evan Tova, this precious stone, would work even for those. So even a person was sick with the kind of thing for which you need a segula, then Avraham knew the remedy for that, and therefore people could look at his stone and that would work. Now after he passed away, Nevertheless, Hashem took that and put it into the sun, in the sense that the sun, or the during the different times of the year, we have sometimes it's hot and sometimes it's hot and humid, sometimes it's cold and dry, etc., depending on the different seasons, and those are what cause sicknesses. So by saying that the stone was placed in the sun means, in other words, as the Gemara is saying, when the sun is in the sky, that tends to make people feel better, because in other words you have it counteracts, like this is the very fact that there were the different seasons and the different temperatures and the different humidities and all sometimes makes people sick, but the sun itself has an effect and helps cure those kinds of things. The Rashba goes on over here and explains that it means symbolically. That the precious stone of Avraham Avinu, he says, again, means Avraham's tremendous chokhmah. Avraham knew all the different kinds of chokhmas, natural science, as well as much as possible about Alakus. So that's represented by this precious stone. When he had it around his neck, means in other words, Avraham would speak and tell people about Hashem and about all these tremendous things, and therefore any person who's sick, we don't mean physically sick, we mean spiritually sick, says the Rashba. Anybody who's spiritually sick, who doesn't know what Hashem is, and he doesn't know what it means, what a person is, this is here in the world for, then Avraham would cure him from that ruchniyistic sickness by bringing him tachas kanfei Hashchina. Now, what happened is, after Avraham passed away, says the Rashba, when we're saying that that stone was placed into the sun, what it means is, in other words, that from now on, what's one way of developing a relationship with Hashem and realizing the greatness of Hashem is by looking at the sun and all the other heavenly bodies and realize how exquisitely they're set up. Here we have today in Rambam also, and in Shlosha Parakim, we have the same man in Perek Echad, it'll be soon, where the Rambam makes that exact point, that when a person looks at the Galgalim and the planets and the stars and sees how perfectly everything is set up, then it makes him realize the greatness of the Eidishta and brings him to Ava and Yira of Hashem. So the Rashba is saying that's represented over here by Avraham's precious stone being now in the sun. On the side over here, there's something from Chidushit Ga'onim that talks about a long explanation about all these different things that we're saying about Avraham Avinu. That also the idea is, in other words, different angles what was it that made it possible for Avraham to have an influence on the world? Was it the fact that he had primarily chokhmah of how Hashem created the world and not so much natural science, that would be represented by saying that he didn't have a daughter. He had chokhmah elikis, and that itself drew people to him. On the other hand, if we said he had a daughter, then it would mean, Rabbi Yehuda would say, that he had also tremendous knowledge of natural science as well. And then we go on with the opinion that he had bakol, which means he had all the different kinds of sciences. And then on top of that, he had itzagninus. He had also the ability. He had supernatural knowledge as well to be able to know from the stars and planets and whatnot to be able to foretell the future. And everybody would come to him for that. And the last opinion that he had the precious stone. Is the fact that from the beginning, that even from 3 years old, he started recognizing Hashem, and that drew people to him, and that caused that now people are attracted to him, and he's able to teach them about Hashem. It's a long explanation that it says here on the side. Rav Hirsch also goes on to say, as far as the last couple of opinions, he says the Tzagninus represents, in other words, like this. Everybody knew that Avraham is successful. Now, people knew that ultimately that the reason is because he serves Hashem really faithfully, and therefore Hashem is blessing him. But that in and of itself wouldn't attract people to him. Okay, so he's a frum guy, so he's close to Hashem, big deal, I'll go on living my life. But when they got the notion in their head that Avraham has itzagninus, that he has some kind of special secret knowledge that they don't know, then everybody's beating a path to his door to learn that secret, kind of. In other words, he makes the point, you know, if you hear of somebody who's a great Yorei Elokim, you're not going to be so eager to go and rush to him. But if you hear that the guy has a special secret to how to become successful, then you're going to be running to find out what his secret is. And then as far as the precious stone is a similar idea. In other words, that people that Avraham's precious, his personality was like a luminous precious stone, that attracted everybody to him. So all of these are various explanations of what it means that Hashem blessed Avraham Bakol. So now the Gemara continues with more explanations. Another explanation is that the bracha to Avraham is that Esav didn't rebel during his lifetime. As the Gemara is going to say, as we're going to point out, that Avraham actually passed away 5 years earlier. Rashi brings on the pasuk that Avraham passed away 5 years earlier than he should have. By rights, he should have lived to 180, but he lived to 175, so he shouldn't have to see Esav going off the Tarbus Rahm. Another explanation is that the bracha for Avraham, that he was blessed by Kol, is that Yishmael did tshuva during his lifetime, as the Gemara is going to show soon from Sukkim. So, Shalem Morad Esav Yomav Benolan, how do we know that Esav did not rebel and go off the derech in Avraham's time? Dichtiv. The pasuk says, "Vayozid Yaakov Nozid." Yaakov cooked a stew. Vayova Esav and Asada. And then at that point, Esav came back from the field and he was famished. And he tells Yaakov, "I want the stew." Now, Ratana, we learn in a brisa. Why was Yaakov cooking a stew? and dafka of lentils, oisayim nifta Avram Avinu min ha'olam, on that day Avram Avinu had passed away, va'osa Yaakov Avinu tavshil shel adoshim l'nachamas Yitzchak Aviv. So Yaakov Avinu made a stew of lentils in order to comfort his father Yitzchak. Because the din is that when a person is an ovel, when a person's relative first passes away, after the burial, he's not supposed to eat his own food for the first meal after the kavura. Instead, other people are supposed to supply the food for him. It's called the sodas havra. So therefore, Yitzchak couldn't prepare his own food, and therefore Yaakov has to prepare it for him. So the Gemara says, Maishna shel adoshim, why dafka lentils? Omer Rav Bamari, Va'ami Rav Ma'arav, Meshmei the Rav Bamari, Ma Adosha Zum Gugelas, just like a lentil is wound, Af Avelus Mugugelas Machzeras Aboy Olam. The same way Avelus is wound, it's a round wheel, and it circles around, and eventually it comes to everybody in the world. So therefore, in other words, giving an oval lentils makes him feel he's not the only one suffering right now. Other people before him have gone through the same thing, and the pashkus, until Mashiach comes, other people will do the same thing. And, you know, you have the expression, sodas rabim chatzi nechama, sorrow shared is a sorrow halved, and therefore that makes him feel better. Ikadamri, another explanation, ma adoshezu en lapeh, just like a lentil does not have a mouth, meaning Rashi points out, you have a lot of different kinds of vegetables and legumes and whatever that come in halves, but the difference is, and lentils also comes in halves, you can split the lentil in half, but the difference is, let's say with peas, you have, there's a place on them where it's very easy, there's a place where a little thing that sticks, either a little thing that sticks out, or a little depression, and it's easy to split it over there. But lentils are not like that. The shape of the lentil is perfectly round, and there's no peh. There's no specific spot where you can crack it open and where you can crack the two halves open. So just like a lentil has no mouth, oval and lepeh, the same way an oval has no mouth, he sometimes just wants to be quiet. And the din is, by the way, when you go to be Menachem Oval somebody, you're not supposed to start speaking until he does. We actually learn it from Pasuk and Iyo, where first everybody's sitting there quietly for 7 days, the three friends, and only then, Achaken Pasuk Iyo is Piyo, Iyo starts and speaks and gives a whole speech over there, and then Eliphaz responds. So therefore, an oval has no mouth, and the sense, in other words, that he doesn't always want to speak. So the same way, the lentil is the same way. So the Gemara says, my benayu, well, we have two reasons why to use lentils. What's the practical difference between them? And the answer is, ikka benayu nachumi b'bei. What about, should we use, to be menachem and oval for the Surah Savra, should we use eggs? They are like the second thing. They don't have an opening either. They're a solid shell, but they're not round like a circle, because an egg is egg-shaped. It's oval. So therefore, according to the first explanation, eggs won't work. Only lentils will, and according to the second explanation, eggs will work too. I think they do often have that eggs are served for a Suda Savra, so apparently.
Eggs and bagels.
Eggs and bagels, yeah. The Rif makes a point over here that the Gemara is bothered by the question. First of all, so first of all, when Esav comes in hungry, why is Yaakov not willing to give him from the lentil soup until he tells him, sell me your Bechorah? And then the reason is because he's making it for a mitzvah. He's making it for the Suda Savra, and therefore he doesn't necessarily want to give it away stam unless he gets another mitzvah out of the deal. So he's going to get the Bechorah. He gets another mitzvah out of the deal. Another point is also that he can't make something nicer for Yitzchak. He can't make him meat or wine or something. And the answer is because of the symbolism in lentils. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So in this connection, Rabbi Yochanan says, "Chomesh averus over oisa rosha ba oisa ayoyim." That rosha Esav did five averus on that day. Baal Naira Moirasa, he had relations with a Naira Moirasa. Now technically, Tosfos points out, under the laws of Bnei Noach, there's no such thing as a Naira Moirasa. Under the laws of Bnei Noach, there's no such thing as Kiddushin. There's Nisuin, when they actually have whatever their equivalent of a chuppah is, and they have relations. Up until then, a non-Jewish woman is not considered married lahalacha. Nevertheless, Tosfos is Mechor Hadavah. It's still an ugly thing for him to do. You know, it's not Bekobadik for a descendant of Avraham, for a grandson of Avraham to act that way, even if technically it's Mutter. The Horegas HaNefesh, he killed somebody. Now, there also, the one he killed is not such a bad thing in and of itself. It's brought in Midrashim that the one he killed was Nimrod, because he wanted the special clothing that Nimrod had that went back to Adam Rishon, and he killed Nimrod for it. But nevertheless, it's still, you know, it's... B'kofer b'ikir, he denied the basics of, the denied the basics, he denied Hashem. B'kofer b'tchias ha-mesim, he also denied tchias ha-mesim. Some mafoshim talk about that maybe, if he's kofer b'ikir, automatically that includes kofer b'tchias ha-mesim. No, who else does tchias ha-mesim? So they talk about kofer b'ikir, would mean he agrees that Hashem exists, but he claims that Hashem doesn't directly influence things in the world. The shot is a b'chora, and he made fun, he mocked the b'chora. But how do we know all these things? Because here the pasuk says that he came from the field in connection with a naira marasa, kiva soda mitzah. It describes a man who finds a naira marasa in the field and rapes her, and it uses the same expression basoda. So we understand that when the pasuk is saying that he came from the soda, it's telling us that he had just done such a thing. Vaharagas on nefesh, we know because kiva
it's in
Devarim. So what? The whole Torah is one. Yeah. The point is, because we often make Zera Shavas like that across Chumashim. So what? The whole Torah is one Torah. When Hashem recorded it, when Hashem dictated it to Moshe to write, it was long after Esav's time, and Hashem has Moshe write the word Basada in order that it should put us in mind of that word Basada in Chumash Devarim. Yeah, that's how it is. That's how Zera Shavas work. Next. The Horagas and Nefesh, when he's saying he killed somebody, Sibacha Oyef, here you have even from a Navi, Sibacha Oyef, because here the Pasuk says he came home tired, Ochtiv Hosem, Oy Navi, the Navi says in the name of the Jewish people, woe now to me, ki Oyfa Nafshi Lahurgim, my soul is tired because of the killers. So we see that the word Oyef is used in connection with killing. The Kofer Be'ikr, Sibacha Lama Zeli, because he says, what is this to me? We see that the Jewish people use the word Zeh to refer to Hashem. So again, in other words, the idea is that when Hashem dictated the Torah to Moshe, he had him write what Esav said using these words because it indicates, and sometimes you have the other way around as well. There's a Tosfos in Gittin, for example, that points out that, for example, the Gemara sometimes mentions in what we're going to have actually soon in Or Masechta, we're going to have in a day or two, where the Gemara quotes a pasuk from later in Tanakh and puts it in the mouth of an earlier figure. Because Tosfos points out they knew the concept that's expressed in that pasuk even before the pasuk was said and written. So the same way Esav would have known from his education, from Avraham and from Yitzchak and Rivka, that the word Zeh hints at Hashem. Therefore, he dafka uses the word Lama Zeli. After all, you don't need it, because Emali, Lama Li Bechor, why does he have to use the word Zeh? Means that he's kofer be'ikir, he's denying Hashem. The kofer b'tchei semesim, duchtin hinei anoche ha'olach lomos. He says, behold, I'm going to die. So we see, I'm going to die, in other words, and I'm not going to come back alive again. He's in effect saying, the shot is a b'chorah, and he mocked the b'chorah, the chid, because the pasuk actually says, v'yivaz eisav es a b'chorah, that he mocked the b'chorah. A couple of interesting things in that regard. First of all, they have a taich in the pasuk that they used to teach in Cheder. Maybe they still do. I don't know. When it says the pasuk mentions five verbs of what he did, vayokam, vayoychal, vayesh, vayokam, vayelech, vayivad esav asabachorah. So it doesn't actually mention explicitly these things, because as Gemara is saying over here, we darshan them from words in the pasukim. But there's a verse they would teach little kids, vayokam, and he got up, vayoychal, and he ate without washing his hands. Vayesh, and he drank without making a bracha. Vayokom, he got up without making a bracha acharena. Vayelach, he went without kissing the mezuzah. Vayivez, and he mocked the bechorah. In other words, the idea is, we teach kids, even from a young age, you would think kissing the mezuzah, how does that go together with not making a bracha and not washing? Those are actual halachas, that's a minhag, but the point is, in other words, that even not kissing the mezuzah is already a step in the wrong direction, is a step towards being an Esav.
15.
It's 15 at the time, yeah. Yeah. There's also, of course it doesn't require, but the point is, in other words, that the point is that a person has to, the point is, we want to teach kids, even from a young age, you have to have a certain, we want to develop by them a certain natural love for the Eibishter and for his mitzvahs, and that should be expressed in the fact that naturally you want to kiss the mezuzah. You have even, by the way, there's a story, there's a long story of the Frida Kadeba, that the Frida Kadeba tells in Lakut Diburim about a yid, some, 200-300 years before his time, who had grown up in a frum household and learned lots of Torah and was actually a Talmid Chacham, but he went off the derech, and for many years he was living as a goy, even as he's learning Torah. And eventually the Baal Shem Tov sends one of his sent one of his Talmidim to make the guy Baal Tshuva. It's a whole long story over there in the Kutta Deburim that takes up many pages. But when the guy finally is ready to do Tshuva, his nephew comes to him and helps him in that. So he starts crying and he says, I remember, for example, when I was a little kid, my mother would pick me up to kiss the mezuzah, and my father would make fun of it and say, what are you picking him up to kiss a piece of animal skin? which is, after all, is what a mezuzah is written on. So you see, in other words, that there's this kind of thing that even from kin vayzon, you teach a kid that the natural thing, you kiss a mezuzah, you kiss a thing of kedusha, and here we're saying that Esav did exactly the opposite. I once heard a vort also on it, by the way, in this connection. You know, we have in the psukim over there, where it says that, so what does it say? Esav says, give me some of this red stuff, some of this red stew, and because of that they call them Edoim, because of that they call them the red one. So there's a vort on it that they say, I mean, he was saying that Esav killed somebody, and he was born Naira Marasa, and he did all kinds of other terrible avaris. Why Dafka are we nicknaming him after saying this, I want some of this red food? And the answer is because that's like the beginning of it. When he shows that he can't control himself, he sees something, he has to have it right away. That's the underlying flaw in his character, which leads then to all these things that we're saying in the Gemara over here. Therefore, we call him Edom in token of that we see that flaw in him, that he can't wait. He has to have it right away. And therefore, we call him Edom for that. Okay. So again, the point is, in other words, that again, so all of this happened when Esav was 15, but Avraham didn't live to see it because, as we're saying, Avraham passed away on the day that Esav did all these averus. There was, by the way, an interesting side point in this. Rashi brings on the psukim from the Medrash that what it was is until 13, Yaakov and Esav were learning together, and then at 13, Esav started going off the derech. But he was saying 15. So one explanation is he started in secret going off the derech at 13, but he didn't openly do it until he was 15. But another interesting explanation is, here we have, how do we get the ages? Yitzchak was 37 at the time of the Akedah, Avraham was 137, Sarah was 127, and she passed away then. Then 3 years later, Yitzchak marries Rivka, 20 years they're childless, and then the children are born when Yitzchak is 60, and now at that point Avraham is 160, and then Avraham passed away at 175, and the twins are 15 years old. There's a vort on it that's explained that after the Akedah, Yitzchak spent 2 years in Gan Eden. That's what the Medrash brings, that after the Akedah, Yitzchak spent 2 years in Gan Eden. And Gan Eden is higher than time, so he didn't age over there. So in other words, it's 2 years frozen when he's not actually aging during that time. Then he came back, and then he married Rivka, and everything developed from there. So it would mean, in other words, according to that way of looking at it, when he married Rivka, he's 40 years old because he's only aged 40 years, but 42 years have actually passed since he was born, which makes Avraham 142 when Yitzchak gets married. So another 20 years of childlessness, so therefore the twins are born when Avraham is 162, not 160, and therefore 13 years passed, so therefore the boy is only 13 years old, but nevertheless Avraham is 175. So it actually works out that way as well. Worth mentioning in that connection, by the way, we're going Indian anyhow, Reb Shamshon Afal Hirsch talks about in the Psukim over there. He says, you know what, if we're saying that up until 13, Yaakov and Esav were being given the same kind of chinuch, and now at 13 or 15, whatever, Esav rebelled and went off the derech, he says maybe actually they should have realized to begin with that Esav is not really cut out to be a bench kvetcher, and they should have given him a different kind of chinuch that would be more suited to his to what he's interested in. Alright, getting back to the Gemara, the Sha'asi Yishmal Tshuva B'yom of Menolon. Now, how do we know that Yishmal did Tshuva in Avraham's lifetime? We know that as follows. These two Talmidim, Ravina and Rav Chama Babizna or Babuzi, were sitting in front of Rava, become a Namnim Rava, and Rava was dozing. Now, one possibility is it literally means that he was dozing, that he was taking a nap, and meanwhile they're sitting and then talking in Torah among themselves. Another possibility that I've thought of, I haven't seen a source for this, but there's a Gemara in Moed Cotton that uses the word menamnim in connection with Rava, actually, to mean where he was on his deathbed. He's a goysis, he's almost breathing his last. So according to the usual possibility that it might mean, in other words, even though Rava is exhausted, he's still going to be sitting with his Talmidim and trying to teach them as much Torah as possible. And okay, he has to take a couple of minutes nap, but he's still going to be there and wake up in the middle, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. And meanwhile, the Talmidim won't be wasting time either, and they'll be sitting and learning Torah. If we say that Menamnim means, if we say that Misnamnim maybe means that he's actually about to pass away, means even in his final moments, he's still there with his Talmidim, ready to teach them as much Torah as he can. His Talmidim are still going to be there as much as they can. Anyway, Amalei Rava la Rav Chama Babizna Ubuzi. So Rabina says to Rav Chama, Vade Dam Ritu Meshmeid Rav Yechanan, is it true that you say in the name of Rav Yechanan, Kom Nisa, Kenemar or Sheyesh Bagvia, whenever the Torah uses the word about a person that he gova, that he literally means expired, Eina Elamisa Uzui Misasan Shal Tzadikim. And this refers to the death of Tzadikim. Is that so? Amalai said, Rav Chama says, Ein. Yes. So Ravina asks about Dura Mabel Dhtibul Gvia. What about by the Dura Mabel? The process of Vayigva Kobasar, and they were certainly not Tzadikim. Amalai, so the answer is Anan Gvia Vasifa Kaminan. What we mean is, when the Torah says Vayigva Vaye Osif, when it says that he expired and he was gathered in, then it means it's the Misa of Tzadikim. An idea behind it would be, in other words, the Maharal talks about, because Gvia means like his neshama separates from the body and then goes and asifa and is gathered in Shemayim. So therefore, so by tzaddikin, you have this complete separation. The neshama taka frees itself completely from the body, as opposed to by a regular person, not there's a certain entanglement over there. And then by the dirt amabel, just the opposite. Both their bodies and their neshamas were destroyed, so therefore it can use the word gviya. So he asks him, Yishmol d'chtibe gviya v'asifa. What about Yishmol? It says v'yigra v'yosef, and he was no tzaddik. So the Gemara says, Adahochi, as they were discussing this, Itar Bahu Raboy or Rova. As they were discussing this, Rova woke up. So either he woke up from his nap, or he rallied his strength before he was going to pass away. Omalahu, he says, Daudiki, children. Hochi, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, you should know. Rabbi Yochanan said, Yishmol also Truva Bachaya Ovim. That Yishmol did Truva in his father's lifetime, and therefore it can say on him, Vayigva Vayosif, because Itaka died as a tzaddik. So Menolon, where do we know that from? Because the pasuk says Yitzchak and Yishmal, his sons buried him. Now, why in that order? Yitzchak then Yishmal. Nefti Yishmal koshish miYitzchak. Consider Yishmal is 14 years older than Yitzchak. Might shnata kachoshiv leberesha. So why is he listed first? Alashmamina tshuva avad. Therefore, we learn that he did tshuva va'adbere liYitzchak mikamei, and he had Yitzchak go ahead of him. He recognized like this earlier when Yishmal had been kicked out. Was he claimed I'm older and there, and therefore I'm the bechor, and the fact that you're the son of Sarah, the mistress, doesn't mean anything. I'm still more important. So now, when he accepts that Yishmal is that Yitzchak is his superior, then that means he did tshuva. So the Gemara says, why is that a proof? The Duma der Chochmasim kachashav lehu. Maybe the Torah is listing them in order of their Chochma. Yitzchak was greater than Yishmael. Maybe therefore it lists him first. That doesn't show that Yishmael did tshuva. So the answer is, Elameata, if you're going to say that way. Max. Elameata, but by that logic, what about when you have later on, when Yitzchak passed away? When it says that Esav and Yaakov's sons, that Esav and Yaakov, Yitzchak's sons, buried him, Hochinami, or also you're going to say that Esav is greater, my time of the Choshev Lu Derech Chachmasen, why there wouldn't it list them Derech Chachmasen? Elashmamina, so therefore it has to be, ordinarily the Torah is actually going to list them in each case in the order in which they actually went. Maharshal says, when they're born, then you can talk about Derech Chachmasan. For example, Shem, Chom, and Yefes are listed in that order, even though Shem was apparently not the oldest one. Because fine, when they're born, you want to list them Derech Chachmasan. But here we're talking about when they went to the burial, there'd be no reason to mention that, and therefore, so if we didn't have by Yitzchak's burial, if it didn't say Ace of the Yaakov, then Taka, we would think that it means it's always listing Derech Chachmasan. But since clearly there it says Ace of first, and obviously Ace of is not greater than Yaakov, Shmaminam in the Akhtame, Adburi, Adbure, Mikameh. Therefore, over here, by Yitzchak and Yishmael, since it says Yitzchak first, it shows that Yishmael had Yitzchak go before him, Umi da Adbere, and since he did that, Shramina Tshuva Ovid B'Yomav, that shows that he did Tshuva while Avraham was still alive. And therefore, as soon as it comes to Levaya, then already he's ready to have Yitzchak go first. And in fact, Tosfos elsewhere discusses, that is how is it that we have Tanoim named Rabbi Yishmael? If Yishmael was a Rosh, you don't name after the Shoyim. So one answer is, in fact, based on the Gemara. Since he did Tshuva, then we can name after him. The other answer, Tosfos gives another answer that he did. Tosfos gives another answer, not necessarily does everybody agree that Yishmael did Tshuva. There is a different opinion that he did not. But the vote would be, according to that, since Hashem himself gave the name, Hashem told Hagar, call your son Yishmael, Tishamar Hashem Aloni, then it's a valid name to use even if he lived his whole life as a Rosh. Yom Yom Mashiach Ba'olah, Chafal of Shvat. The pasuk says that in the times of Mashiach, Oy Yesh was Kenim was Kenus, Berchov is Yerushalayim. Old men and women will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. And we have another pasuk from Zechariah. We have a pasuk from Yirmiyah that says they'll be heard in the cities of Yehuda, or Yishama Ba'ara Yehuda, or Chutz Yerushalayim, Kol Kala, the sound of the voice of the Kala. Now, what happened to Kol Kvod Bas Melach Pnimah? So the answer is, the Rebbe says, these Nevuahs are talking about the time of Tchias HaMesim. And at the time of Tchias HaMesim, there will no longer be a Yetzer Hara. Gam Oivav Yashlem Ita, as the Pasuk says, Hashem makes it, when a person does what Hashem wants, then Hashem makes it even his enemies be at peace with him, meaning the Yetzer Hara. We'll learn something about that in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So therefore, now we won't have to be as careful with Kol Kvod Bas Melech Pnima to the degree that we do now. So therefore, it'll be possible to hear the sound of the kala, and it'll be possible for the women to be sitting in the streets and it not being a lack of sneeze. Okay. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis. So we were talking about putting on the talis gadol versus the talis katan and wrapping yourself in it, etc. Now, sometimes you have people who only put their head and neck, who only put the talis around their head or their neck. And especially sometimes you go into some veldish shuls and you'll find those little scarf-like talisim that really do only cover your head and your neck. If they don't cover the body, so you have to be moichah in them, because everybody agrees that wrapping, ituf, is mainly about the body. The machlokas that we had a few sifim ago was, do you also have to cover the head? Where one opinion said you have to cover it, katif as eishmeilim, and the other says it doesn't matter. But everybody agrees the body has to be wrapped in it. Everybody agrees that wrapping the head and not the body is not called ksus, and therefore you can't make a bracha on such a talis. So you have to have a talis that covers at least a significant part of your body.